Well, this is Greggy Moore Books again. I want to tell you, I just invented something. You know, I'm walking around my place here, and I have to take my pills. You know, I'm 74, I get pills. And I don't get off on them, but okay. And so I have this cowboy hat I've had for years. It's genuine leather, fantastic. So I hope you can hear me because the recorder is dangling on the brim of the hat in front of my eyes. So I can walk around. Now, someone said, well, why don't you put it around your neck and let it dangle? But then it slides back and forth, you know? So you get this. Now, some of that is my normal voice. So anyway, sometimes I'm thinking of things. And I was thinking of some things. I was thinking of really two categories. One is people living together. And another one is global warming and stuff. And, you know, I try and be, excuse me, nothing like hawkers, you know, particularly if you don't spit them on the floor. But anyway, I was sort of thinking of global warming and which side of the political spectrum you happen to be on. And see, the world turns. I know that could be a surprise for some of you. But it actually rotates, and it rotates in space. And that's another thing that you guys. There are a lot of people, a lot of friends of mine. The few friends I have, actually my one friend, rotating in space. Yeah. But anyway, I started to think. Well, if it rotates, at one side of it's always dark, and the other side has the sun, right? I mean, one side has the sun, the other one has the daughter. So I get daughter and darkness, never mind. But anyway, now this thing is waving back and forth in front of my eyes, so we're going to run a test and see if this works. My voice could be too close. It could be right up here with you. Or it could be way off in the distance someplace. But anyway, I started to think, if you're a proponent of global cooling, then you have to move at the speed of the globe plus one. So if it's rotating this way, you have to stay in one place, you have to already be going forward. If you want to actually keep going, you have to add more speed to it, so you have to run faster. But suffice it to say that you don't mind half of the day being in the dark and half of the day being in the sunshine. Well, that means that if you're in the sun, you're in global warming. It means if you're in the dark side, you're in global cooling. So, I know some people have political orientations that are such that they insist upon being in the same political mode 24 hours a day. So I think they have to, you know, they've got to compensate for the rotation of this of the globe. So they have to get a jet or something like that and keep, so they can stay in the dark. Now, the cheap seats, those are when you just close the blinds or even better than that, you put a sleeping mask on so you can't see shit. But you can't guarantee that you're in cooling or not, or warming for that matter. Because you can't see. But you have to assume that you can feel it. Now, most people can't tell the difference. But why do you close the windows at night or something? It drops a couple of degrees. Or in the morning, you flip them open because it's warmer and there's the sunshine out there and the little birdies and your neighbor changing clothes. I don't have that situation. I look out on a pizza, like a strip mall, like four, five places. There's a pizza place and grill. There's a salon there for getting your hair done, a tattoo parlor, and then something called, well, it's some kind of martial arts thingy. And then there's a road, four-lane road, and a tree here. And my little crown chairs, which you'll see on the website if you haven't already done that. And then there's the interior here, which you can also see. I did that on purpose so that you could make comments about how I live and why I do things, if you care, which I assume you do, because you guys are nice, and I don't like not nice people, so if you don't like me, theoretically, I don't like you either. But I don't do it on purpose. See, now I'm going into the bedroom to get my phone, because, and this phone's interesting. This phone is from the Dark Ages, I think. It can do certain things. I can take pictures with it. I took all the pictures with it. I can call out and I can get calls. I can text out and I can get texts. And it's pink. And it has jewels on the back that one of my daughter and son-in-laws were friends with. And she decorated the back of this phone with gems. The plastic uglies. Some of which have fallen off. And if I get famous, and that's up to you guys, then this is going to turn out to be a priceless item. And people are going to say, well, whose phone was that? And say, well, you mean the one with the jewels that are and pink and the missing ones? Say, yeah. And say, that was Greggy Moorbrook's. And, yeah, is that his real name? Well, hell yes. I mean, would I fool you guys? More or less. Yeah. Okay, well anyway, so global warming is on the sunny side of the globe, and global cooling is on the dark side. Now, if you go to the moon, for instance, it doesn't rotate. It stays in the same mode, so the same side faces the sun, the globe. Well, put it this way, it happens to go around our planet. So, but it faces the same face. But technically, it doesn't stay put in space. It rotates along with the Earth. So there's probably an argument for global warming and cooling on the moon, too. Now, if you take a planet, I don't know which one it is. I think one of them always faces the same way, Mercury or something. And there you could be politically sound. Because it's sort of like the Mason-Dixon line. You know, somebody sees you coming across, you go, who the hell are you? I'm a global cooling person. Well, get back on your own side of the planet. You know, don't come over here and start screwing around with us. You know, if you want to be cool, be cool. You want to be hot or hot-ish or cool-ish, you know, then you're entitled to your opinion. You're also entitled to be on the side of the planet you want to be on. Unless you go to certain countries where they don't want you to do that. Did you know there are planets that don't... planets. Okay. Did you know there are countries that they don't want you to come in? I mean, can you imagine such a thing? I'm sorry. You can't come in my country. Why not? Because you're a global cooling person or a global heating person. So... And if you don't agree with us politically, you can't come into our country and say, well, but I'm a nice guy. I got money in my pocket. I'm male. You got some women here. Thought I'd come in and carouse a bit and hang out, have some fun. You know, nope, I'm sorry you can't come in here. You have to be miserable. I have to be miserable? Yeah, you have to be... You have to be uncomfortable, and because I'm going to make sure that you're uncomfortable, because that way you'll obey me. Well, what happens if I don't? Well, we don't just throw you out of the country. We make you part of the country. We blow your ass up, or we bury you alive or something, and you become part of the turf. And, you know, people say, what's that? And you say, well, that's minerals for the earth. And you say, but that was my grandfather. And say, well, he was a good man, you know. Didn't agree with us politically, but you know, you can't hold it against him. Not anymore. Now, I think we're gonna combine things. As I'm walking back and forth with this stupid phone in my hand, like I'm talking into the phone, and right in front of me eyes is the recorder, right up here, more close and comfortable. Okay, I'm going to put the phone down. Did you hear that? Now I'm going to go into my kitchenette, which has my buddy Fridgy here. My refrigerator has a spirit. It is a spirit. And her name is Fridgy. And I love my Fridgy, and my Fridgy loves me. And when my wife was ill, she actually talked. She was very upset when we were upset. And she would squeak and squeal. When I first heard that, it was the middle of the night, I thought we were being attacked from Mars. Or was it Venus? Could have been Uranus. I'll leave that one alone. And one of the angels, one of the women who came over to take care of my wife, heard the sound from the refrigerator. And she said, "What's that?" I said, "That's Fridgy." She said, "That's Fridgy?" I said, "Yeah, she's talking." I said, "Does she do that often?" I said, "Only when necessary. When she wants to say something, she says it." And I know that I'm doing the right thing and I'm paying attention if I don't hear from her. But if I screw up, my refrigerator gets upset with me. And remember, she's taking care of my food. Now some say, "Well, wait a minute, she's got an on-off switch." Her compressor wouldn't come on unless she decided to make the refrigerator cooler. So there is an antithesis to this. You know, if she was upset and she didn't turn her compressor on, well, then I'd lose all my food and stuff. But I also wouldn't hear her. So she has a choice. Either tell me what she thinks, which, believe me, is in spades, and keep the food closed, or we all go down the tubes. But there are other people. They're the ships, which I'll explain a different time. But my guardian angel is a ship. And I'm fortunate enough to know who it is. But she didn't make herself, well, she made herself known, but I wasn't paying attention until I was 60, and then my mom passed away, Clementine, and I suddenly became starkly aware of my guardian angel. By the way, you get assigned, not assigned necessarily, but assigned a guardian angel at the second of your conception, the absolute time, real time. So, you know, when you start thinking of the abortionists and stuff like that, you start thinking, you know, there's a guardian angel standing there around in a line, I guess, as a queue. Well, you're next. And then when a child is conceived, boom, there's the guardian angel. Well, can you imagine how he or she would feel if all of a sudden that baby was terminated? Now, sometimes terminated for a number of other reasons, health, God's will, whatever you want to say. And then that angel has to stand there and slowly head falls, and they turn, and they walk away, and they go to the end of the line, and they turn around, and they stand there. And the guy standing in front of them says, "What happened?" I said, "Well, baby didn't make it." And say, "Well, what was it, God's will?" And say, "I'm not sure. He thought it was a great idea, but, you know, that's part of the plan. You know, some make it, some don't." "Oh, well, then I'm sorry." And say, "Yeah, but you see the guy three up? Yeah. Well, that was an abortion." And so, you know, what happened? "Well, they conceived. They decided they didn't want it." And somebody said, "Why don't you put it up for adoption?" I said, "Well, I want to carry it around for 9 months." I mean, just think of the discomfort. And say, "Well, just think of the discomfort when God's standing on your chest because you did a no-no." But anyway, you know, I mean, you can make that akin to war. You know, well, my government said I'm supposed to pick up this rifle and go over there and shoot that son of a bitch over there. And I'd rather not. Looks like a nice guy, somebody's son. And now it's daughters. So now when you go to war, you can have the opportunity to blow the face off a girl. Now, I don't know about you, but being male, I can think of a whole bunch of things I'd like to do with these ladies other than kill them. You know, they'll die soon enough. You don't have to help it. Now, they're volunteering. They're saying, well, I want to go fight too. And my question is very simple. Why do you want to put on a uniform and, you know, be a captain of a ship or something with a whole bunch of men and women in it and do the same thing that people did for the last so many wars? Why? What do you get out of it? You know, now, if a guy gets his ass blown up, you know, his, what I call his luggage, you know, that has the little round things in it, and the little round things store up a bunch of other little wiggly things, and somebody fires them, and sort of like, hold on, boom, bang, right up against the cervix. Well, anyway, don't ask me what that is. Look it up. And that's one thing. You know, as I pointed out, that the males, the sperm is they're not asteroids, comets, and not the cleanser, right? Don't get that confused. You don't get that confused. Get your pipes. Anyway, and then the females are planets, and you can see how it works. But what if you're the planet? In other words, you're the one that has all the eggs. Well, there are two things that have to be considered there. One is you're responsible for them, just like the men are responsible for their little wiggly things. And God didn't say anything about, I haven't figured it out. I did figure one thing out. I think I mentioned it to you. That if you took all the men, if you assume they were 155 to 185 pounds, the German sailors, the submariners who died in World War II, and you figured out their weight, okay? And there were like some 30,000 died in these little tubes going around. And I also looked at the displacement meaning how if you filled up an American destroyer, a Fletcher class destroyer, how much water would be in it if you filled it up. I found out it was almost close to the same weight. So the displacement of a Fletcher class destroyer in the Second World War was the same as the body weight of all the Germans who lost their lives in those submarines. And I don't have the numbers, I'll tell you another time, that if you took all the U-boats, you put them alongside each other, they're like 5 miles, it's 5 miles, I think, if you put them end to end, and it's like 2.5 miles or something like that if you put them side by side. And you start to think to yourself, you know, you're driving along and you look out there and just an endless line of boats end to end for 5 miles or something like that. I'll tell you the right numbers. Show up for another meeting and I'll tell you what it is. I can look it up, but with this thing dangling in front of me, I don't think so. I finally sat down and gave up. I'm not going to make my breakfast yet. I'll go through this with you a little bit. And you have to imagine that you got your gun and you go up the top of the hill. It's bad enough that you're carrying all those little squiggly things. But guess who pops up on the other side? A woman. Now you got a choice, dude. And you have some sub-choices. The first one is shoot her in the head and who the hell cares? The second one is shoot her in the belly or a little lower and you're killing the whole planet full of people. And they're going to die right there on that battlefield. Well, what if you hesitate? What if you don't? Well, then she's going to put a bullet someplace that you're not going to want it, and the little squiggly thing is going to die within a little bit of time. Can't save them. Well, you can, but I don't think anybody's interested in that. You gotta look at the microcosm involved with war. Now, I'm not being funny, but I'm being what's called in the trade amusing, which means you can take terrible things and you can talk about them in a way that you don't have to throw up. You can put them into a context where you can consider them, and you're not laughing, but you're amused, and amused by definition is not necessarily entertained, but amused means your attention's on it in rather a normal, accepting mode. So this thing's waving back and forth like a Christmas ball in front of me. But women in war. Now, you know, when the British came over and bombed the cities, and the Germans came over and bombed the British cities, nobody was thinking of the microcosm. And you take the number of sperm a guy's carrying, even the little ones, the younger ones, even the old ones, one or two. You can bomb that son of a bitch. He's only got a couple of those little squiggy things left, you know. And nobody wants them anyway, so. You might as well go over there by the bushes when nobody's looking and get rid of those two. At least he gets the joy out of it. Anyway, see what I mean about amusement? But you drop a bomb. Boom. And you kill a whole lot of eggs and you kill a whole lot of sperm. Now, as I understand it, 72 million people died in World War II, military as well as civilian. And you start multiplying by the number of eggs a given woman is carrying, or a young girl, even an old one. But she can't do much about it. She's not going to go over by the bushes unless she wants to watch that old dude get rid of his last two. Hey, should I play taps? anyway, but then the numbers get absolutely extraordinary, and sometimes extraordinary numbers either numb you so that you don't pay attention to them. That's too many numbers, I can't think of something that big, or you get awed by it and you go, oh my god, I killed every woman I killed you know, a lifetime's worth of somebody else. And all the guardian angels are standing around waiting. And they're waiting for that guy. Now let's change the scene. He comes up over the top of the hill. He doesn't have a gun. He's got a handful of flowers. And he comes up over the top of the hill and he looks and there's a girl come up the other side. And she's got a basket full of fruit. And they look at each other, and he goes, hi, and she says, hi, and he says, this might be kind of crude, but I got my luggage with me, and I'm assuming that you have your little supply of eggies, right? Yeah. What are you doing for about the next minute and a half? No. Yeah, well, it's been a while, sweetheart. Anyway, a friend of my son's came back from the war. He was over in Iraq, and he was married, and he came to visit. And let's say her name was Sue. And he said, boy, when I got home, he said, my wife had the happiest, most joyous minute and a half in her life. I thought, was that worth going off to war for? I don't think she thought it was such a great idea. The other thing, my grandmother went to Ireland on a ship. Why? To see the ancestors. Well, not the ancestors. Well, I suppose them too, but the relatives. And my grandfather was a night watchman at U.S. Rubber in Naugatuck, Connecticut. And he was out at his gate when Nana came home. And she took a cab from wherever the boat was and ended up, she went down to the plant. And the window was down, And the cab pulls up and she goes, "Hey, Dave." And he saw Nana. He saw Nora. And you ever see a watchman leave his post where there's such a vacuum that there's a little twisty thing going? He ran across to the cab and he dove through the back window. Landed right on top of my grandmother. Gave her kisses all over the place. And then she said, "Well, Dave, had I known you were going to do this, I would have gone away more often." Another part to that story. When she went on that voyage, believe it or not, there was a Scandinavian baker who was also on the ship, and he took a shine to her. And he kind of courted her through the voyage, and he said, "What are you going to do? You're going to stay in Europe?" Europe. And she said, "No, I'm going back home." And he said, "Are you going home by ship?" She goes, "I don't know yet." He said, "Well, I'll give you my card, and if you go back on the ship, I'd like to go with you and conceivably make an offer of marriage." And she said, "Well, that's really wonderful." So she took his card and enjoyed the dances and all that kind of stuff. And she flew home. Well, she told my grandfather about the story. And he said to her, "Nora, didn't you tell her about me and the kids?" She said, "I didn't think it was any of his business." "Why would he want to know? And I didn't bother telling him." That was my Irish grandmother. She was a Tempest. She was a Kerry woman. She was from Kerry. She was a little place called, what was it called? I'll think of it in a minute. And Scarta Glen. Spelled three different ways, but Scarta Glen. And one of these days I want to walk where they walked. I want to walk. And my Russian grandparents, they'd spent some time in Irkutsk and Omsk and St. Petersburg. And I thought, I'd like to go to Russia. And I really had hope for that when Putin had the Olympics. And I even know some Russian, you know, Ya govorit nemnogo по-русски. You know, I can say something like, "Я хочу большой стакан пива, пожалуйста." I'd like to have a glass of beer, please. Or спокойной ночи. That's good night. And a few other things. I like the word bread. Хлеб. Try to say that. Хлеб. Хлеб. This is another one. В кухне. Like in the kitchen. Well, anyway. I started to learn my Russian again because of Putin and the Olympics. I thought there was hope. And then he went into the Crimea, and I deleted my files. That was my way of rebelling. And I went, "If you're going to do that and you're going to use the Olympics like that, then, Putin, old buddy, we can't be friends. And you took away my excitement and enthusiasm. I thought I was going to go to Russia. A new Russia, and stop wearing suits like the Western guys. Wear the Tsar's outfits, you know. Wear the medals and all that stuff, you know, from the KGB and all that crap. Well, it wasn't the KGB back then, but secret police, whatever. And he wrecked it. He wrecked the whole thing for me. I was a half Russian, and I was all excited. I was ready to go back to Russia, and I wanted to go to Irkutsk, and I wanted to have pelmeni and a troika on Lake Baikal in the middle of the winter when it freezes over. And I actually thought it would be kind of a nice idea to send Putin an email and say, "Well, Putin, congratulations, you finally brought Russia out of the dark ages." And it was funny because the opening ceremonies were all about that, except it was mainly about the communist part of it, which is, you know, like they say in the South, from hunger. You know, I mean, who the hell cares? You know, every nation, everybody's heritage, we were peasants somewhere. And I'm still a peasant. My wife said, she likes peasant food. She comes from the Ukraine. And I say this with a compliment, you know, Eastern Russia is very peasantly oriented, was not so much anymore. And so she puts down the basket and she says, would you like a fruit? And he says, I would like very much to have a fruit. And one thing leads to another. And let's assume 6 months goes by and there's a beautiful little wedding with a little chapel someplace, you know. And they're on the wedding night. And he's all nervous and she's all nervous. And he comes into the room and she's demurely sitting in the bed that covers her up to her chin. And he's trying to figure out how to take that cover and slowly bring it down and reveal the world of joy and excitement to himself and share it with her. And she looks up and she sees him standing there, you know, looking like a knight from the Dark Ages. And there's her knight in shining armor. And she's wondering what he looks like without it. And her mom had taken her aside and said, I'm going to explain a few things to you. And she said, like what? And he said, what to expect on your wedding night? And she said, well, what do I have to expect? So she goes through and she describes everything. And she goes, really? She goes, yeah. And he said, that's how I got here? And he said, well, yeah, pretty much. Yep, yep. There was my knight in shining armor, your darling father, and there I was, but I didn't have the covers up around my chin. I wasn't even in the room. I was hiding under a chair in the next room. See, he had to come in and get me. He had to move furniture twice, one to get me out from underneath, and the other one to rearrange the room once we found the right furniture. Well, you can't do that if you shoot each other not even a chance meeting at the top of a hill somewhere. And I think that what we should teach our children is what we were too stupid to accept, even though we knew. You can't go around shooting each other. And that's what those people in Chicago and all that stuff, they drive by shootings and all this garbage. Can't you find something better to do with your time? Go down, sit in the library, learn something, paint the house, clean the street, help somebody. You know, what's the big deal with guns? I like guns. But I don't want to shoot them. I just like them. I put them on the wall. I like playing with them. I used to have a 45, a Peacemaker 45, on my desk. And it was called Complaint Department. Somebody come in and sit down next to my desk and want to complain about something, I'd pull out the gun, I'd put it down and say, okay, go ahead. Well, first of all, it was a replica. And second of all, the person would start laughing. I tell you, I did one thing. One of my kids had a friend, girl, who we rescued. We went and picked her up and rescued her from some strange house. And we kept her. And she said she was suicidal. So, she didn't know about my 45. My kids did. Because they didn't have any complaints either. No. Not really. Did I tell you they had German Mausers? They had a complaint. They aimed them at me and went, we have a complaint. So I took my 45 and put it back in the drawer and said, well, shoot. Nope, don't. Never mind. Never mind. Tell me what's bugging you. Well, anyway, she came down, sat next to me down the office. I had an office at home. The whole company was at home. And she said, I can't deal with this. I can't deal with all this stuff. And And I had left my complaint department in the other room, and she was talking about jumping off bridges and stuff like that. And I said, "Hey, wait a minute. I said, just sit there, don't go anywhere." So in the other room, I brought out my 45. I sat down, I cocked it, and I banged it on the table right in front of her, and I said, "Go ahead and shoot yourself." There was a dead silence. She looked at me, she said, "I was only kidding." I said, "I wasn't." She never committed suicide. She got married a couple of times, and she had some nice kids, and to my knowledge, she's still alive and well. And, you know, if you're going to play with weaponry like that and you're going to use them and as part of the conversation, that's one thing. But as my other grandmother used to say, when the talking stops, the fighting starts. Well, how right she was. So I suggest that anybody listening to this, give up war. That doesn't mean go out and demonstrate against it. Legislate against it. You know, demonstrate. You know, whoever you demonstrate against goes and gets a gun, comes out and says, "I want you to stop that." Well, what if we don't? Well, we're going to shoot you. And they say, "We're demonstrating against war, and you're going to come out and shoot us." Say, yeah, pretty much like that. And say, "Are we supposed to fall prey to that and go leave and let you keep doing what you're doing?" Say, "No, you can find another way." Like, for instance, Congress. Well, when everybody stops laughing, you say, legislate, change the rules. But don't change the rules of the government. Don't change our rules. They're good rules. It's a good country. Best country in the world. And I thought Putin was going to, you know, he wanted to be better than us, except he's using our way of life against us for his own purposes. And that's not very nice. And he ought to put on his shirt, get off the horse, get off the motorcycle, and legislate. Do the right thing for the right reason, for the right people. And take your ego and, yeah, anyway. So, I kind of like the scenario where that young man, or even the old one, sat quietly on the bed and smiled at his new wife and said, "Can I get under the blanket too?" See, he didn't take the blanket off, so she would be cold and possibly embarrassed. And she said, "Are you going to take that stupid armor off? Because you're about tipping over the bed and you weigh about 300 pounds. He may without the armor, but anyway, say, "I'm going to take it off, but I'm going to do it discreetly and just ignore the clanking of the metal floor." And he does. And she sees that he's a rather handsome man, much better than a swimming pool. And he sits and waits. He doesn't grab hold of the blanket. He just sits there. And you know what they're waiting for. You know what he's waiting for. He's waiting for an invitation. You see? Because neither one of them went to war. And they're doing what a young couple should do, or even an old one. Sit on the bed and kind of contemplate what the next move is. So what does she do? You know, am I writing this story for you? She slowly puts her hand up under her neck and she moves the blanket away. Not much. She doesn't throw it off. And I know some women that you couldn't find a blanket of your life depending on it. Well, anyway, and there was good reason for that, you know. And then she demurely, she looks down or she looks into his eyes and he still doesn't do anything. And slowly she lifts it up because there's room for him to slide under there. And he does. And I don't need to tell you the rest of the story. Because that's the story that every young couple should have.
no matter where they come from, no matter what color they are, what size. Whether one goes clank and the other one goes woof, demurely, or they come racing across the room like two charging bulls, or and bam-o, whammo. And I was sitting in the bar with my mother once. We had a lot of fun together. We were sitting at the Holiday Inn, a bar. We had stopped on the way home for shopping. And there was a guy sitting there telling jokes, and he's just a funny guy. And he said, he was talking to everybody at the bar, maybe about 10 people, everybody's kind of enjoying it. And he said, you know how you can tell whether you made love right? And everybody goes, well, you know. He said, if the furniture's on the same side of the room, you didn't do it right. And I wrote a play called The Temp. Well, I used my pseudonym, you know, Greg Taylor, so you know that, you know, my fake name. And it has that in it. You know, the kids are going, how come they rearranged the furniture and then put it back where it was? So when we go in the morning, the furniture's in the same place, but they spent a couple of hours rearranging it and then putting it back together. And one more or less implies, well, maybe they're indecisive. You know, because women do that. Say, can you take that chair and put it over there? Sure. And then 2 minutes later, can you move that chair over there? Mm-hmm. Well, it's God's blessing to men if you go into a room and there's a bed in it. And the girl says, you know, I don't like the bed over there. I'd rather have it over there. And he starts thinking about pulling and shoving it around. And she goes, uh-uh. And he goes, uh-uh. I bet you we can move that baby. And he goes, betcha. No, that was that Alaska person. Betcha. Well, anyway, it's 10:44. Oh, I have to salute my spirits. So give me a second here. I do it with 042 and 420, and I do this throughout the day. It's 10:44, so I missed 10:42. So here's my salute. 10:42, my ships. 10:42, the fates. 10:42, Friggy. 10:42, the rest of you. Thank you very much. I do that throughout the day. I do that because I live in the world of spirits, and so do you. We don't live within the world of humans. We live within the universe of spirits. It's all spirits. My guardian angel happens to be a World War II destroyer. I lost her surface life in 1940. Her name is HMS Glowworm H92, with no commas. She told me it's one name, no commas. And she lost her surface life to a German ship, a Nazi ship, called the Hipper. And she fought valiantly. And she had a Lieutenant Commander Rupp, who was the commander of the destroyer. And then we had Guido Haya, Capitan Haya, who was the captain of the Hipper. And he had a battleship, and Rupp had a destroyer, the HMS Glowworm, H-92. And he came out of the fog, and there was the ship. And they were going, full of troops, they were going to Norway to attack Norway and take it over, which they did. And, suddenly Rupp is facing a battleship. So he starts firing at it and does everything he can. Well, you know, there's no match. You know, he's got 330 feet or something like that, and Hipper was like about 600 and some feet, twice as long, with great big guns, and he had these little 4-inchers, these little poppers. Well, he fired everything he could until finally he realized he was going to have to ram. So he said to the exec, whoever was on the bridge, prepare to ram. He unfortunately didn't have time to tell the rest of the crew. And he ran Glowworm right into the side of Hipper. Tore a hole about, I guess, a couple hundred feet long, knocked out some water tanks and some torpedo launchers. But didn't sink the Hipper. But Hipper managed to completely destroy Glowworm. And I wrote a book called Out of the Darkness and Into the Light. And these are all books. The Valiant Scatter is the name of the series, and Talking Sea is the brand of the books. There are six of them. One of them is Glowworm. And when I realized spiritually about her, she basically said, I want to say something. And I more or less said, what would you like to say? And she said, well, I'm going to say it through your mind, and you're going to write it. And I said, yes, ma'am. And I did. And each one of the books is written from the perspective of the ship. One of them is, there are a number of other ones, which I'll leave as a mystery for you. But when I wrote hers, my wife even said to me, why did you spell it that way? I said, because that's the British way. And she said, okay. And why that turn of phrase? I said, because Glow said it. Well, I've never heard her. To this day, I've never heard a voice. But my wife did. I read a lot of books. Well, Greg Taylor does anyway. And we were up to about book 50. And we were putting them up on Kindle at the time. And we, you know, 50 is a milestone. You know, if you've been married 50 years or a 50-year reunion at your high school or college or something, you know, it's like significant. So she said, okay, well, think about 50. I said, okay. So we went to sleep. She woke me up about 4 o'clock in the morning. Greg, wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up. What? She said, Glow just said to me she wants to be 50. I said, what? She said, Glowworm just talked to me and said, in a British highfalutin voice, she said, I would prefer to be 50. And you know what we did? I don't even have to answer that, do I? She was 50. And I'm getting goosebumps now. I can always tell. I can always tell when they're around. I mean, they're always around, but and at times they kick my ass. They really do. I mean, sometimes they really lunch me. You know, Greggy, you're stupid. You're doing the wrong thing. You know, they can't tell you by their mandate. They can't tell you exactly what to do. Because God has a philosophy, which is he doesn't close one door without opening another, but it's your business to find it. Okay, well, their mandate is they can help you close the door and think and conjure and consider. But they can't tell you, their mandate is they can't tell you where the door is. They can tell you once you get there to open it, make a choice. But they can't guide you. Because otherwise, predestination that becomes a factor, and that's not what God wants. It's called random patterning. God goes boom, and the universe is formed, and then it reforms itself later on. It answers whatever the cosmic question is. But don't ask me. That's Greg Taylor. He's the philosopher. I'm the derelict writer. But anyway, that's what I do every day when I have. We lived at a house had an address 402, and that didn't turn out very well. But we left that house and went in an individual apartment, so we had three. I'm still in the same one. And the other daughter's in the same one. And the other daughter moved. So she's in her second apartment. And it's an interesting arrangement. I kind of liked when we were all together. We had four generations, three. Three or four generations in the same house. And then my mom passed away and I took care of one. But that's when I discovered Glow. So anyway, I want you to think back and I want you to go to bed with that young couple. And I want you to be a spirit. And I want you to stand off to one side. Not as an ogre or an ogler or a voyeur. I want you to pay attention to that. And I want you to listen. And I want you to know what's going on. And the next time you think about war, and the next time it pops up in a conversation, I want you to put those two on that battlefield hill and on that beautiful hill with the flowers on that beautiful day. And I want you to decide whether you want to volunteer for war. It's one thing if you're conscripted, which I was, and whether you go or you don't. My wife helped people go to Canada. She was vehemently against the war. She was a demonstrator. And I was over there in Germany. I was drinking beer, but matter of fact, one day in the to put it in perspective, one day we were all over at the it was always there for in the NCO club, and we were all drinking and stuff. A couple of girls had come in, but all of a sudden, one of the guys just out of nowhere, he knocked over his chair and he just jumped up on the bar. And he went, pardon my language, he went, what the fuck are we doing here, drinking and having fun and carousing, and they're over there dying. Man, the only time, I think, in the history of the Nimbus Club, it was absolutely silent. And some stayed at the bar and kind of kept their faces down, and the bartenders kind of walked back and forth quietly. One of which is, Jeff was a friend of mine. And the rest of us kind of got up and left. And if you walked out the back of the Nimbus Club, you could see my barracks, room 204, I think that was my room, which is kind of an ironic thing. That was the longest walk I ever walked in such a short distance. It took an eternity. By the time I got to the barracks, it had to be about 11 or 12 o'clock. I'd go to bed anyway. And I slept very soundly that night, but not because I was tired, because I didn't want to hear that guy on that bar again. And, you know, situations like that happen. Because I think I said it already in one of my other spiels. When they asked me about my dog tags for religious preference, I said, no preference. They said, no preference, and they put it down on the paper. And they didn't ask why, and I didn't tell them why. My feeling was, if I'm dying on the battlefield somewhere, and I got a couple of minutes left, and somebody wants to stop and hold my hand, you know what I'm saying? Okay, this is Greggy Moorbrook signing off. Kind of on a somber note, but it won't matter to me who that person is or which side he or she's fighting on. If humanity surfaces at the last moment, that's good enough for me. No preference. Love and kisses. Bye.